Have you ever thought about wilderness therapy for your son? Today's guests, including a boy who has gone through wilderness therapy, are here to give you a full picture of what leads up to that decision and how that decision plays out for not only the boy, but the family. Stay tuned.
This is On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your hosts, Jennifer L.W. Fink and Janet Allison. I don't know about you, but one of the most stressful things that I deal with on a nearly daily basis is what to make for supper.
I was just going to ask you, what's for supper tonight, Jen?
I don't know. I have no idea. And it's almost noon my time. I don't know. I need help in this department. And that is why I'm so thrilled that Cozy now has meal ideas, recipes right in the app that I can look at. I can add ingredients straight to my list and I can meal plan on my calendar for the week.
Okay, let's back up. Cozy is an app that helps you get organized. Calendars, doctor's appointments, and I think one of the best things, as you're saying, is grocery lists. Your kids can add items to the grocery list and you can stand there in the grocery store going, oh my gosh, what am I making for dinner tonight? Pull up Cozy and there's recipes and ingredients and you are ready to go.
Anything that makes my life easier and is on my phone, which is with me almost all the time. Fantastic. Cozy, go to the app store. You can set up an account. You can add all of your children, you can add your spouse, anybody can add to the grocery list. You know, they all have their phones on them anyway.
That's for sure.
Coordinate and communicate.
It's Cozy, C-O-Z-I. Download it from your app store and meal planning just got so much easier.
And now on boys. What do you do when you see your son on a path of destruction? When he's maybe self-harming or self-medicating with drugs and alcohol, and nothing that you have tried so far has worked. Some parents choose wilderness therapy, which is sometimes known as outdoor behavioral health care, and you may hear some other terms as well. As some of you know, several months ago, we interviewed Kenneth R. Rosen, a gentleman who was enrolled in a wilderness therapy program when he was a teenager. And he wrote a book about his experience called Troubled, The Failed Promise of America's Behavioral Treatment Programs. Now, after that episode aired, Jane, not her real name, she reached out to us and she said, you know, her son is currently enrolled in a wilderness therapy program. And she did not think that that episode fully represented the experience and asked if she could speak on behalf of thousands of parents that have placed, not sent, she emphasized, not sent their children to a behavioral treatment program. And our kids are thriving. Now, listeners, you know that parenting is challenging, and we know that there are no one-size-fits-all answers. Our goal here on Boys has always been to present you with information and tools that you can use to make informed choices for your family. So today, we are talking with Jane, as well as Tammy and her son, TJ. TJ is 21. And he did a wilderness therapy program nearly 4 years ago. And so Tammy, TJ, and Jane are here today to share their experiences and their perspectives with us. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you for having us, Jen. We're happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Let's start here. Wilderness therapy, this is not a decision that is made lightly. Nobody just wakes up one morning and says, hey, guess what? So tell us, Jane, I'm going to let you start first. And then Tammy, you can chime in. Tell us, you know, what was happening? Why was this a consideration and then a choice that you made for your family?
Yes, thanks. You know, we saw our son starting to spiral years ago. And we tried everything we could, from you know, therapists, to coaches, to talking to him, to some more severe consequences. And it was everything from school avoidance to we started noticing experimentation with drugs and alcohol, the defiance of family rules. And it got to the point where my husband and I just didn't feel like we had control. We didn't feel like we had any influence over him. And then to compound everything, COVID hits. And that just was the catalyst, right? That was, and I'm sure this is for many out there, but it just made everything so much worse. He was sneaking out when he wasn't supposed to. He was it was just this cycle of dysfunction. And I think it got so bad that our family actually started to normalize it, because we lived with it for so long, we didn't realize how bad it had gotten. And then he started having problems with the law. I remember somebody telling me this, I think it was his therapist, that said, he's either going to be in an orange jumpsuit pretty soon or have an addiction problem. Like, he's going down a really bad path. He was 14.
He was 14.
So 14 and already having these issues. And we were just at a loss. We felt out of control. The fear just took a hold of us. And I had a friend that had placed her son at a wilderness, I believe the same one that TJ went to. And she said it was wonderful. So we looked into it. We kind of had that in the back of our mind, but we kept giving our son chances to go to school, to do, you know. And then when I think the final straw was when the school came back to us and said he was truant and that they were going to have to call social services on us because we couldn't get him to school. That was the final straw. Say his mental health was priority.
I appreciate you saying that, because that is a point that we have made and emphasized on the show before. It is 100% totally not only okay, but often necessary. Prioritize your kids' mental health and your mental health over school. School and learning can happen at any time, but if the mental health piece is not there, like going to a building that is ostensibly about learning, it's not going to do anything for anybody. Tammy, I imagine a lot of that story sounds very familiar to you.
Yes, very similar. I think we have this very similar story. And it was about the same age. TJ, about eighth or ninth grade, was starting. We noticed he just sort of had this blank look to his eyes. He started just seeming depressed. And I know I'm telling your story, TJ could tell it himself, but he started telling us that he was drinking cough syrup, and we would find a bottle of vodka in his desk drawers. And we noticed he really needed some help. So we started with therapy. We started doing weekly therapy, which it helped for a little while. And then we would try family therapy, DBT therapy, and nothing seemed to work. And he was falling asleep in class. And we even tried sleep medications, which gave him really bad dreams. And what happened was, as a parent, you think, oh, we're such cool parents, we're laid back, but you become reactive parents. It becomes dysregulated in the household. Like you said, you start setting the bar low because you feel like, okay, well, you just get used to the way it is. And actually you don't really, but he did sneak out of the house all the time. And I don't know if you want to tell about how you were feeling during that time.
Yeah.
TJ, I'll leave it up to you because I'm telling your story.
And we are all really interested in hearing your story because, you know, as parents, we know what that side feels like, but I'm so grateful that you're joining us because you can tell us what that was like from your perspective. You know, I'm sure your plan wasn't, let me see if I can terrify my parents and go down a spiral. And like, that wasn't your intention, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, that's a great point there. It's really not the initial intention, like, and you know, all that stuff to be, it's not I want to hurt my parents. It's more of I want to escape from something. And it's kind of difficult to describe that something that you're like escaping from, but it's like people kind of put labels on it, like depression or anxiety or whatever. But a lot of those are kind of like labels, and the real like experience is kind of deeper than that. It can be really confusing, and we use these ways, like these terms, to generalize, but I think that every single person's experience is different. For me, like my experience is that my brain will go spiral. I'll overthink stuff, it'll make it hard to be content, I guess. I've gone through the AA program and learned what I can from that. The AA program can be used for many different things. Like, so I was using it for my weed addiction, and it really was one of the things was that really stuck with me, was that before we found ways of coping with our thoughts and our emotions, like we were irritable and discontent, and it makes you seek out external things to cope with that.
You know, I found myself nodding as you're talking. My brain does that same thing. Like, I can spiral myself down like a pro.
Yeah.
And you know, when you talked about, there's really not words for it, or sometimes words like depression or anxiety get put on it, but there's more. And I mean, certainly at 14, especially, you don't know what is it, who knows, like every day is different. You just know you feel, and pardon my language, you feel like shit sometimes. And so I can see how, you know, from your perspective, and you are just trying to get through the day.
Yeah, it's a great point. Every day is different. Even after treatment and after going through countless hours of therapy and of months of treatment, it's not like it gets to be perfect. You know, like I still suffer with depression and not like suicidal thoughts, but it's kind of always a thing in your brain. You know, it's just mm-hmm. kind of like the way my brain's wired to be like, want to escape from it. Mm-hmm. And the really big key is just to find healthy coping mechanisms to that. What wilderness kind of instilled in me was using like meditation and yoga or other exercise, as well as getting out into nature to come to peace, like with your own brain.
I have a feeling that if when you were 14-ish, 15-ish, right, and you are doing your best to get through the day, and you at some point tried weed and that helped from your perspective, right? You're not feeling those bad feelings anymore. I have a feeling that somewhere along the line, maybe your parents did say, hey, TJ, let's try meditation. Hey, TJ, let's develop some healthy coping mechanisms. You know, at that point, things weren't clicking for your family. I know, like, you know, your parents love you. Your parents loved you. And at that point, yet nothing was really helping.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, when I was in that, it was, it wasn't like I'm smoking weed. I wasn't really thinking like I'm smoking weed all the time because I am trying to escape. So I need these healthy coping mechanisms. It's more like my friends and I want to go get stoned, and we're going to go get high and then like do something, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like partying, you know? A lot of times it was that, I really don't think that for a lot of people, smoking weed is necessarily a bad thing. Like, I just think that for me, like specifically weed is something that my brain's like, okay, that is easy. Like I can, everything feels okay once I smoke weed. So I want to do this a lot.
Well, and we humans, all of us, adults, children, teenagers, easy is always better than hard, right? Almost always we're going to default to what's easier than the hard part, because that's how we are all wired as humans. So I want to go back to Jane. You mentioned, you know, it kind of becoming in some sense sort of used to the dysfunction that's going on in your house, kind of, you know, reacting. I think everybody listening, like, you can see how very quickly this becomes a negative and unhelpful cycle, because we've experienced it as parents. Many of us experienced it as teens, right? We know that our teens telling us what we should do is not helpful. We know that as a teenager, we're like, screw you, I'm going to do whatever I want. You both did your research. You tried a lot of other things. And, you know, you reached the point where you said, I think this is what we are going to do for our family. The process of getting a kid to wilderness therapy is a bit of a process. TJ, your parents knew that you were going to wilderness therapy before you did.
I knew the day of. I knew when I woke up at 4:30 in the morning.
So let's back up for a minute. Tammy, share with us how this went in your family and why. And then TJ, I really want to hear your perspective on this also.
Well, it started, the thought process started when he was a freshman of 14 or 15. Because a friend of mine who knew somebody who placed her son in a wilderness program, she sort of planted the idea in my head. And she also had an educational consultant for her daughter, because her daughter went to a residential program. So I never thought it'd be something I would do, but I would hear my friend talk about her daughter's experience going to a residential treatment center. But it was never going to be for me, but I would always listen to her. She sort of planted the idea in my head because her friend's son went to a wilderness program. So I always thought, well, maybe I should just have this plan in the back of my head in case I needed it in the future. Like, maybe this should be like a game plan later on. And so it was always sort of in the back of my head. I did meet with an educational consultant, but we never did anything about it. So I think we had to have a few more years of ups and downs. We had to try everything we could. I mean, he had a great therapist, but she got to a point where she almost kind of fired him because he wasn't using the skills, the DBT skills, dialectical behavior therapy, that she was teaching him.
Define DBT, because a lot of people may not be familiar with that.
So DBT is a type of therapy it was created by Marcia Linem, and it was, in the first place, it was to help with, I guess, with
borderline
personality, but it also became such a big process with therapy because it's sort of like it teaches you skills. Instead of telling a therapist what your problems are little by little, you really just learn skills to regulate your emotions. Like, you learn communication skills, like how to communicate, validation, learning how to validate someone's feelings, or learning how to use I feel statements. And
so TJ was in this therapy program, and I'm sure you talked to the therapist as well. And you're like, here's all these great skills. And the therapist is getting frustrated because they're not being put into action. And, you know,
right.
I can't keep working with you if you're not going to do your part.
Well, we were putting them into action, and we actually were doing family therapy too, all of us. Okay. And we it did help, but it just wasn't enough. And what else we did, he got an IEP at school to help him with, you know, he'd fall asleep in class and get behind. I mean, he had executive functioning.
You finally made the decision. You worked with an educational consultant and you found this is the place. You and your husband knew this is going to happen. And TJ didn't at that point. And I think there's reasons for that. Can you elaborate why things usually happen that way?
The main reason why it wasn't really working for me was because none of the skills and none of the therapy really was helping a little bit, but it wasn't like I couldn't really get fully into it because I wasn't receptive to it. Like, I wasn't willing to get help. because I didn't think I had a problem with, I didn't think I had much of a problem, even like I convinced myself, I'm like, I'm good. Yeah, it's fine. If a kid's not like willing or like doesn't really want help, is defined from that, then it's just, it's there's a limit to what you can do. And that's a main reason why wilderness is one of the only options after you try therapy, because wilderness or other therapy programs where like they kind of have to be there are really effective for young people, because like if you're under 18, like you're still under your parents' care.
Legally, they get to make the decisions for you at that point in time.
Once you're over 18, like it's, you're all on your own, you know, and your parents can cut you off, and you can.
And you can cut your parents off. You can do what you want.
You can mess up your life, or you can make your life as good as it can be. And that's when you kind of figure out you need to get yourself help. But before then, like once you're, when you're like for kids, like, or under 18, it's, wilderness is pretty effective, because that's like one of the only places where it's like, well, you're not willing to get help, but help is being, you get help.
Jane, did your son know that he was going to wilderness therapy before he went to wilderness therapy?
Oh, no.
Now, I just want to interject here for a minute, because talking this through, it makes perfect sense. I have teenagers, right? So if I tell a teenager that I am going to make them do something they don't want to do, they're going to resist in every way possible. And if things are already to this point, I mean, frankly, I would be concerned about the kid running away at that point, would be my concern.
Yes, I have a runner. Yes. And so, you know, when the school started contacting us saying, you know, we're going to have to call services on you guys, and you know, my husband and I were throwing up our hands saying, we're doing everything. And we were also in the process of trying to get him an IEP at that time as well. We kind of said to our son, very, not so very subtle hints, like, if you don't engage with us and start participating on a level with your dad and I about why you're not going to school, or you know, sharing with us what's going on with you, we're going to have to make some decisions that are going to impact your life without your input. So we dropped those lines to him all the time. And he just sat there with his technology. We also sought out an educational consultant as well. We researched transport teams. I had never heard of these before. I never knew they existed.
This right, is not would something you? They like, hand you when your baby boy is born. They don't say, by the way,
no,
in a decade or so, you might need to know what a transport team is. No, they make sure you can strap a car seat in a car, then you can go home.
Right, right. And so we quickly found out what a transport team was, and there's several, and they provide a very valuable service for parents. They are in charge of getting your child from point A to point B. It can be to a wilderness program. It can be picked up from somewhere, brought to an airport to get the child on an airplane. It can be brought between schools. I mean, you name it. There's all sorts of reasons they're involved. What I hear over and over from people who don't understand it is they feel like it's a kidnapping. And it's really not. It's the most safest way we felt we could get our son to a program that he was not willingly going to go to. If we had told him up front our plans and what we were doing, he would have been out that door. Boom, out that door. And we knew him well enough that that's what would have happened. So these teams are designed to, you know, you let them into your house. It's usually early in the morning, depending on how far they have to go and where they need to go.
Well, and also because if you want to surprise a teenager, do it early in the morning because none of them are up then.
Yes, that's the other reason. So we had about a 5-6 hour drive ahead of us, what the transport team did. So we didn't have the airport kind of situation. And they came in, and their job is, we went in first to our son's room. We woke him up. Of course, he's groggy. He didn't know what he told us to get out of his room. We just said, you know, I was holding it together. I wasn't crying yet. I just said, I love you. And these men, and I introduced who they were, I said, are here to transport you to a program to get you help that you need, because your dad and I feel like we can't give you that help anymore. And so we introduced the men. They came in, they sat down with our son, and they said, they were quiet. Our daughter was sleeping in the other room. She didn't hear a thing. They were quiet. They just sat with him and they just said, we're not leaving, but we'll wait for you however long it takes you to get ready. And they advised him, like, get some clothes on and come with us. And he was confused. He was like, what, who are you? Where am I going? I'm not going anywhere with you. Get the F out of my room. He was getting a little confrontational, like, who are you? What? But they were very calm. They had him in their car. And we got out of our house because I was emotional at that point. And they advised us, they said, sometimes it's better if you go out and get a coffee and we'll just text you when we've got him on the road. And that's what they did. It was 7 minutes. 7 minutes without any fight, nothing. They had him in the car. They texted us. They said, we've got him. He's quiet. He's asking lots of questions now. Like, where am I going? Who, what did it? And they told him, very abbreviated, they're like, your parents have chosen this program for you, this wilderness program. And then they drove him there and they stop along the way and they get food. It's not torture. If a child does become extremely violent or tries to harm themselves or them, they will have to restrain them. But I think those situations are very few. I think it's more, honestly, the parents have more anxiety process, honestly, than anyone.
I want to hear, I really want to hear TJ's perspective here, because I can see how, you know, as a parent, like, no, this is not kidnapping. Like, this is a plan. But I can see how to a kid it might feel like kidnapping. So I really want to hear your perspective on this, TJ.
Yeah, no, I've known a lot of people that have gone through that experience, and I've gotten plenty of good stories that when it comes to that. But I think that for the most part, it seems like for me, I did not get the transport service. And for me, I kind of wish I did, because it would have been more straightforward.
Let's clear up your experience. Your parents basically served as your transport service. You still didn't know where you were going. They kind of woke you up and said, hey, we're going on a trip.
Yeah, basically I woke up, it was the day after my 17th birthday, and my friend had just given me this 500 milligram edible for weed brownie, and which is a very high dose brownie. So I'm like, they wake me up, they're like, we're going somewhere. I'm like, okay. They told me something about going to some depression seminar or something, or camp. And I was like, crap, I don't want them to find my brownie. So I eat the whole thing and just to get rid of it. And I'm like,
you can't see what's going on, but Jane is laughing because, like, it does sound funny. And TJ, in telling it, you know it is too. And like, all of us are like, I mean, yeah, that's 14, 15 year old thinking. It makes perfect sense. Hide the evidence. But yeah, I'm sure that hit, didn't it?
Yeah, I was still feeling high the next day.
yeah.
I basically like woke up in the wilderness. Like, I guess you'd call it greening out. Like, it was like a blackout, but you're just like, I didn't really comprehend anything until I was like in, I see my dad being like, bye. Like, once we get to Colorado, and like, I'm with these, like, I think I was perceiving them like with these hippies, like, sure, with long hair, and we're going somewhere. I have no idea what's happening. Like, and, yeah, no, it's the transport service. It seems like it would be a lot more straightforward, because you don't have time to like, they're like, we're going, let's like, and it's not, there's nothing, like, no manipulating your parents, you know, trying to get out of something, doing something. It's just straightforward.
Because let's be real, at that point, you're pretty damn good at manipulating your parents.
Oh yeah, for sure. And it's, you're still trying to manipulate them, like, even like once you're at wilderness, trying to like write letters, so they're like, get me the fuck out of here, you know?
Well, let's talk about that. That's one of my big, big questions. So Tammy and TJ, you guys are collaborating on a book about your experience. And in this book, you include excerpts of letters and text messages that you sent to each other. And I think it is fair and an understatement to say you weren't happy about being there, TJ. And I don't think there's really probably any or many kids who their first thought when they get there is like, oh, thank you, mom and dad. I am so glad you did this. Instead, it's much more likely to be a string of curse words and these feelings expressed in paper and whatever other measures you have of like, you're expressing these feelings of anger and betrayal. Like, how could you do this to me?
I think it's even less angry and, or it's less betrayal because I mean, it's like, I knew it was like my fault. Like, I was like,
you know that at the moment? And I'm asking, yeah. Like, I know you're 20, 21 now, but did you know that when you were 15?
Yeah, I knew I was being a prick. Like I was, I knew I had put my mom and dad through a lot. And, but I mostly just felt anger in a selfish way because I'm like, God damn it. I'm here for three months. And it's like 3 months is not even that long. I was away from home. Like I never came back home. Like I didn't live at home. I'm living here for the next 3 months. Like I'm not going to be living at home for what?
Well, 3 months is a long time, especially when you're 14, 15, you know, you're focused on the immediate future. Like you had friends, you had things you were going to do. So I'm stuck here.
Yeah. It seems like a long time. But in the scheme of things, like for me, it was weed, but for especially people like that are on harder stuff. I had friends that had were doing like pills and heroin and were trying meth, and like 3 months for them is gains like a lot more life. You know, it's a small price to pay for a chance at like at being free from that addiction and that cycle. You're never truly free from it. Like especially when you're on like harder stuff, I've known a lot of people with a lot of different experiences. And for the most part, it's a fight every day. It's work every day. Like you have to clean house all the time.
Changing a habit, even if that habit is something as stupid as like chewing on your fingernails, is extremely difficult. So yeah. If your habit is rooted in something like just not feeling good, biochemical, you know, issue in your brain, and then you're surrounded in this culture where these things are so available, that is hard. Anybody who manages to break any kind of addiction has my utmost respect because that is hard. Jane, I want to hear about your experience with your son. I don't imagine that first letter home was, I love you, mom. Thanks.
No, in fact, there's kind of a joke in the process that parents are waiting for the bail me out letter. And they peg it. The therapists at these programs will give you, your teen will give you three scenarios. Either like, I'm good. I've learned what I need to learn. Bring me home, or the F you letter. Or the, you know, like everyone else is worse on me, mom, this place is abusive. So you'll get either like those three scenarios, one of those three, you will get that answer. And sometimes we make sure of each. So we got a lot of anger in the beginning, but like TJ pointed out, our son pretty early on owned up what his part in it and his accountability in it. He was still very angry at it, just his situation, not so much maybe at us. He kind of understood the why behind it. He was more angry at the situation. Like we sent, when he went to wilderness, he was there in the winter months over the holidays.
Mm.
That's really hard. It wasn't being cold. It was just that he was out in these elements that were hard, and they really let natural consequences take over. Like you build a not so great shelter, you get rained on. That's natural consequences. There was a lot of back and forth between the therapist, the Zoom calls, and the letter writing. But eventually we got to a point where there's an acceptance phase. You know, it's the phase of accepting, taking accountability for your actions and for families, as it gives, it's a pause. It's a pause button for the family. The child or the teen that's struggling is removed from a possibly toxic environment, whether that's your family, whether that's your peers, whether it's technology, whether it's drugs, they're removed and they get to have, they're in a physically good setting that's safe for them. They're eating healthy food. They're getting probably more exercise than they've ever gotten. Mm-hmm. And they're getting therapy snuck in. The therapy is when they're hiking along. They're not just sitting there in an office with four walls talking to a therapist. Their therapy is constantly throughout the 24 hours, whether it's through the peer groups that they're walking with, whether it's a learning moment of, I can't get my shelter right, or complaining you don't want to hike anymore. And the rest of your group looks at you like, well, we got to hike to our next camping spot. You know, like you're just constantly faced with decisions throughout your whole day. And therapy is woven in at every moment. It's a different type of therapy other than like you just sitting in a really clinical setting with the four walls. And then for the parents' perspective, real quick, it gives us a chance to just breathe. I slept the best I've ever slept when he was away because I knew he was safe. I knew he wasn't sneaking out. I knew he wasn't using substances. He was safe. He was unhappy, and that's okay. And the biggest takeaway that I have learned in this whole process is that I cannot control my son's feelings. I cannot control his choices. I can only control how I react to him. And that has been life-altering. The realization and the self-awareness on myself is huge.
TJ, I can see that you have things that you want to say, and I want to hear your perspective of the flip side.
I was just saying that it sounds like she went to wilderness therapy. Like it's, I don't know how you express that in such coherent terms, because that's a hard thing to express. Yeah, it's the wilderness, the therapy really is woven into through all parts of it, because just even living out there and backpacking, I'm sure that I'm not really sure what the history of like of the people that started with like the first wilderness therapy, but I'm sure that they understood that even like living out in the wilderness, it brings with it like a therapy in a way,
you
like
know,
therapy in a sense. Just
I've never gone to wilderness therapy, and I haven't done an official backpacking trip yet. Plan to. I've done hiking though, and one thing that I know about hiking and like longer hikes is like there are times it sucks. There are times it is physically uncomfortable, mentally you are not having fun anymore. But there's something to be said, like you do it, and then you realize, okay, I can survive hard things. And I can see how simply that part of the wilderness is valuable. And then you add in all those other layers, of course, of actual, you know, emotional support and skills learning and group experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wilderness therapy is like that times 100. Yeah. It's because you're out there in like the wilderness hiking in either the snow or the hot summer, it is honestly miserable a lot, like a good amount of the time. It's hard. Like it's not an easy experience, but
it is not a luxury glamping experience, is it?
No experience worth having is easy. You know, you can have like 10 years where you don't do much growing, or you can have a couple months where you do 10 years worth of growing. You know, like I think that that 3 months in the wilderness, like probably like if I hadn't done that, I have no idea where I would have been like now. It really did teach me a lot about myself and a lot about just how to live in a positive way. It kind of started to instill in me some sense of discipline, I guess, because I think that discipline is the key to happiness, which when I say discipline, I mean, even though you don't want to do something, you do it anyway, because mm-hmm. you have to. Yeah. That's like the key to anything. Cause a lot of stuff that I even do now that I like, that like for my future, like it's not something that I exactly want to do, but it's something that I do because
I get that. I mean, I am in the process of writing a book right now. Let me tell you, it's miserable more often than it's not. I do not enjoy every moment of that process. But if I don't do that work, I can't get to the end part, which, I mean, there's a lot of pride in knowing that you have created something or maybe created something that helps somebody. And in the same way, like going to college, for instance, you know, the actual taking of classes and all of that, that's not necessarily fun. You like you deal with a lot of things that you don't want to do, and learning how to persist through discomfort is an important life skill. And what I hear you saying is that's one of the things that you learned. I mean, you almost absorb that part by being in the wilderness.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like Jane was saying, there's natural consequences out in the wilderness. It's a for a lot of times I'd build crap shelters, and I'd wake up with snow on my face, or some, again, with the shelters, like sometimes it'd fly away, I have to run and go grab it with like in my underwear, you know.
Yeah, shortcuts are not paying off necessarily.
I think I built a shelter on the side of a mountain once, and I learned about water tension because it all of a sudden it started. I saw like, oh, it might rain tonight. I'm going to build a shelter on the side of the mountain wall. And all of a sudden at 3 a.m., just water starts coming down, seeping into my sleeping bag from the mountain. I'm like, ah, crap. So I have to, while it's raining, go set up another one. You have to learn how to build a good backpack, or it's going to get destroyed. You have to rebuild it. You learn a lot about doing things the right way, you know, the first time, thinking before you take action.
What is that saying where it's hard now, easy later, or easy now, hard later? So you set things up, and like even just on your daily basis, you have your house set up, you're cooking, and you have everything prepped ahead of time, and makes your cooking experience a lot easier if you have it already. But if you don't, and you know, sometimes I'm cooking and I'm grabbing stuff out of the fridge, and things are getting hot on the pan, and I'm trying to cut it. But anyway, so it's the same kind of thing with anything in life.
Jane, what were you going to say? I saw thoughts on your face as well.
Well, TJ brought up some points in about timeline, and I think that the programs, what I want parents to understand is these programs are not forcing change on you or your teen. Instead, they invite the change to happen, but the teens do it in their own timeline. And some teens, you know, take a lot longer to process their change, and others do it in a quicker. So you're not purchasing this like outcome per se. You're really investing in the process, and that takes a long time. And I know that kind of like the baking of the bread, you know, metaphor, where if your child is, you know, begging you to bring them home before they're quote done, before they're fully mm-hmm. cooked and done with the treatment, then you're just losing all that work. But if you wait until the time is right, then you create those deep internal changes. Time plays a big factor in all this. And that's why these programs are set up for the 3 months. And then even at the end of the 3 months, there is oftentimes there's a second step, which is called aftercare.
I want to back up for just one moment, because after you sort of explained some benefits of this program, TJ said, it sounds like you went to wilderness therapy because you learned all of that. And I think a really important point that you have all made, this isn't something that is done to your kid. And this most certainly is not a magic solution, right? This is a process. And even though your child may be in one location and you are in another, the family has to be involved, because without family involvement, frankly, I mean, if the child goes somewhere and learns stuff, but the family environment and the home environment, and by home environment, I'm including, you know, peers in school, everything else stays the same, it would be very hard to maintain whatever positive changes happened.
Very fantastic quote, if you would allow me to read it. As part of the process in this, the parents are engaged in a lot of their own work alongside their teen. They do work, they read books, they're required to do it. And one of this great puzzle piece analogy, if you will, is from Tim Thain, who wrote a book called Not By Chance. And he said, picture the family system as a puzzle with different pieces, being the individuals in your family, the environment, the friends, technology, and so on. And your teen is the puzzle piece in the center. Imagine you take him or her out of the middle of that puzzle and mold, change, and reshape that piece through the therapeutic process of treatment. When it is returned to the puzzle, if the pieces surrounding that reshaped piece are rigidly holding the same shape as before, those surrounding pieces will cause the malleable one to eventually return to its former shape to fit in. The whole needs to be adapted to fit the newly shaped piece. The surrounding pieces are the ones that need to become malleable to create a space that invites the returning piece to retain its new and improved shape.
That is a really...
I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's so well expressed and visual.
It's beautiful. Yeah. If you don't change, if the parents don't change in this process, I feel personally that is why a lot of people do not have good experiences in these programs, is because the family members, whether they're parents, guardians, didn't change alongside with their team.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons that people don't or get have negative experiences with it. There's for sure something to be said of bad experiences or bad programs, which I know there's like a movement around wilderness therapy that is very anti wilderness therapy. But I, for the most part, I think that like there are those same problems exist in every single other piece of the world, that there's so many people that get, have positive experiences or at least learn something and to take back into their regular life, that you have to really look at it in a broader sense. The main thing is when you go back to your normal life, like this, it's kind of like what we are doing with COVID. Like, it's not going to be normal. It's a new normal. I was really nervous to go back to like regular life. Or when I first got to wilderness, it was crazy to me that I would be gone for 3 months. I never went back home, never lived back at home for the rest of high school. Like right after aftercare, which is like the boarding school type thing that you go to after wilderness, I moved to Santa Barbara and went to Santa Barbara City College. And I lived in Isla Vista, which is a big party town. And I lived in a house that's like a sober house, where everybody is trying to get help. What that really taught me was, it was probably the best thing I could have done, because I was around, at any point in time I could have gone, like I had friends that were like smoking weed, you know, and I had friends that were partying all the time, but I also had friends that like were in the program AA. And so it really taught me that the people that you're with, like, it's like, you don't have to do everything that they're doing. You know, it taught me to think for myself and be an individual.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier, Tammy, I think you mentioned it first, and Jane, you may have done this as well. You know, you mentioned using an educational consultant who helped you sort of explore and learn about what the options are out there, because again, nobody gives you this information when you have a child and you think you're never going to need it. And this is this huge, overwhelming, specialized world on some level that you know you don't know. You know you want your kid to be safe and healthy and well, and you know you want a good program. And sure, we've all heard stories that there are bad everythings, right? There are good doctors, there are bad doctors. There are good hospitals, there are other hospitals that you maybe don't want to go to. It can be so hard to sort through all of that and just overwhelming. So I'm interested in your thoughts, Tammy and Jane, on How do you find an educational consultant you can trust? How do you know it's somebody you can trust? You know, how do you do this due diligence and have some level of confidence that this is reliable information versus this is somebody who wants my money and will tell me, you know, whatever I want to hear to get that money?
Well, yes, there are those people. And like you said, there's always the bad apples in the bunch. And first of all, I have to say I was really lucky because I had a friend that just had a great educational consultant. And she pointed me in the right direction right from the beginning. So I don't know what I would have done if I didn't have that. I'd never even heard of an educational consultant before.
And even if you did, you wouldn't know what that term really meant. Like educational right. consultant is so damn general. What does that mean?
I know it sounds like for college or, you know, but they're specialized therapeutic educational consultants. They don't really say therapeutic when they say it. They usually call themselves ECs. If you don't have that friend that can refer you, of course, you could do your online research. There's Facebook groups that can help you give you the referrals, or there's also a website, educational consultant, IECA, and they have a list of all of the educational consultants. But of course, you're going to hear all about all of the educational consultants. It's better just to ask around and find out and call a whole bunch of them, because some that, you know, might be my educational consultant might not be great for another person. Because, you know, one of the things I wanted to say about wilderness therapy, it's not only for kids that do drugs. Drugs are just a symptom of a problem. You know, I think there's a misconception about wilderness therapy, about it being for drugs. And I actually had that misconception because I was worried if I sent him, he would learn all kinds of new drugs, which he did. But I mean, it wasn't really... I mean,
he's shaking his head. He's like, Mom, I knew those.
No, we have access to the internet. So,
well, there's a lot of misconception about it. And I actually, even with local therapy, your local therapists, providers, like psychiatrists, a lot of doctors, they just don't even know about wilderness therapy, or they have a misconception about it from the internet or from all the documentaries and the books that are out. They have a misconception and they blanket all programs as being abusive. And, you know, they don't really understand or have the knowledge of the local therapists don't really have a lot of knowledge. So I'd actually asked, when I'd heard about wilderness therapy, I had asked his psychiatrist, I asked his therapist, and all of them were hesitant about it. And that's why it took me actually 2 years to find a program.
Jane, talk about that process for you. Like, how did you navigate this? And what would you most importantly advise other parents in terms of how do you figure out who to trust? What's reliable information? This seems to be the question of the 21st century too, by the way. Jane, what is your advice and experience with navigating the system?
I think, like with anything, you got to do your research. I interviewed. Let me back up. I first found an online support group of other parents that were on this journey, who were further along in this journey than I was, because frankly, your current friends and your family, they don't get it. They just can't even understand it. And they don't even possibly agree with your decision to place your child in these situations. So I sought out my own support group. And within that support group, I got recommendations. And then I followed up and I interviewed them, just like you would interview for anybody who, you know, I just interviewed them, I asked them questions. And I think a lot of issues that these teens struggle with, it's because they have an underlying issue. And in our son's case, it's a special needs. It was learning deficits that started out. We started seeing a decline in school very early, and that's where all of his issues have stemmed from. So when I finally found the educational consultant we chose to go with, she had a fantastic knowledge of learning deficits, executive function. And so that helped us tremendously in our placements for him for aftercare and what environment he would most thrive in. And I think that that's the biggest thing, is it's a very lonely process because your whole family is unraveling at the seams and no one knows what's going behind closed doors and your four walls. And so you've got to find your tribe. You got to find other people that have gone through this experience, and preferably other people that are a little ahead of their journey than you. So finding that support group is essential. I found it online because it was COVID and, you know, nobody was doing anything but online. So I found this online group. I was asking questions. People were answering, asking advice. I was interviewing, you know, people. And the educational consultant that we chose is not local to us. She's in another state, but she has the bandwidth with all these programs. And the other thing is you make sure you ask them, they're not getting kickbacks from those programs. And you make sure that
that's an excellent point to
you ask them explicitly. That. Oh yeah. You ask like, do you get any sort of benefits or kickbacks from referring someone to these programs? And they say no. And then you also want to look at the accreditations that these programs, they have these seals on the bottom of their website. You want a good program that has all these accreditations that have all the certifications that they went through to be the certified good program. Some parents have their school districts help paying for their wilderness or their aftercare through their school district, through their special education. I wish that was more of a majority. I wish it was more like that, but unfortunately it isn't. But some parents didn't really get the choice because their school districts kind of told them, we'll pay for it if you go here.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of different pathways. And I think what the educational consultant does is it just, you're so overwhelmed. You're in a state of crisis. You don't know where to turn. And the educational consultant is like your beacon. It's like, they're the ones that are just shining the light in all the different paths, funneling all the information to you in a concise way that you can absorb. She gave us 5 wilderness programs to choose from that she thought was a good fit. Then it was up to me to interview all the 5 programs and even go so far as I interviewed each therapist that would be my son's primary therapist. I interviewed all of them. And then one of them just felt good. You just know that feeling when you got the click with the therapist and you feel like they're going to get your kid and you understand it and you go with kind of your gut on that. That's how it worked in my situation.
You have all lived this experience of, you know, your family is unraveling at the seams. You feel out of control. You do not know what to do. Jane, you brought up such a good point about a lot of us feel such acute shame too, right? When somebody else is talking about their kid being on the honor roll, the last thing you want to do is say, well, I don't know where my kid is right now. I don't know what he is doing. I'm terrified that he's not going to live to the end of this year. And yet being able to connect with other people and be honest with somebody is really the only way you're going to get through that. So what I want to hear from each of the 3 of you, and we need to wrap up. I realize we've been talking for a long time already. I want to hear from each of you what your advice is based on your experiences for families who are at that point. You are at this, I feel like my family is unraveling at the seams. I feel like I've tried everything. What 1, 2, maybe 3 things would you tell that family to do now?
Well, my first advice would always be to hire, if you can, an educational consultant, because I wouldn't be able to recommend any program because everybody is so different. Mm-hmm. There are so many programs throughout the country. There are probably maybe 40 wilderness programs, and they all specialize in different things. And also, you don't want to just pick one program. You don't know the therapists. Well, would the educational consultants know all the therapists, or they have ones they know will fit with a certain type? Mm-hmm. In addition to that, some programs with a great therapist might be full at the time. And these groups only have about maybe 8 to 10 or 8 to 12 people in a group. Well, that group might be full. So there's just so many elements to it. So I would recommend hiring a specialist to help you with that for the best result. You want the best therapist. You want the best milieu of kids. You don't want to put your kid that is maybe dysregulated because they are cutting themselves, and they maybe they're a little quiet or soft. You don't want to put them with a bunch of kids that are, you know, more ODD, or you just want to have the right combination of kids. Mm-hmm. So basically hire a specialist is what I would recommend.
Jane, what would you say?
I agree with those points, educational consultant, and find a support group that understands what you're going through. And I know, I think I just started by, like, mine was, I talked to this woman that had placed her child in one of these programs. I asked her, she said, oh, there's an online group you can try join that. You just start finding your support group, because the shame is paramount. And that's something you have to, as that's your own internal work that you gotta get, you've got to work on. And I think the biggest takeaway from me is that you have to be, the parents have to be prepared to do their work alongside their teen. It's not a time to sit back and watch their teen change. They got to get deep within themselves and it gets icky. They have to come to terms with how they contributed to their destructive self with their teen. And it's because we started to, I would say moms in general are more enablers and they're more enmeshed than, and they contribute to that cycle of destruction because we were parenting out of fear and out of anxiety. And then once you get removed and you start looking deep in your own self and maybe even looking at how you were raised or how your parents raised you, there's this deep embed, you start to just really do some work on yourself. And that can be eye-opening and hard to take. It's hard to put a mirror up to your face and to see how you contributed to your teen's struggles. And we all did because of how we reacted to their behaviors. And their behaviors were a symptom of something larger. But we have to take a, we have to put a mirror up to our own face. And if you're not prepared to do that, this will not be successful for you.
If you're not ready to do that, it is not worth spending the money on it at this point in time.
Correct.
I will say, as uncomfortable as that whole holding up the mirror is, like, there is something for me, and I can tell for each of you, there's something about having kids and my love for them that made me brave in a way I was not before. I wasn't going to look at all that stuff for myself, even though it was affecting my own life, but I was able to do some of that because I could see it affecting my kids. And so my first motivation was I want to help my kid, but guess what? It helped my life too. And then it helped our family as a whole. And so I want to put that encouragement out there for parents, because as uncomfortable as this is, for one, you're already uncomfortable, right? You're not having these discussions or decision because life is great right now. Things aren't working. Discomfort may be part of the process. TJ, I want to hear from you.
Yeah, no, I think that wilderness therapy is a great tool for parents to use for and children, like people that are lucky enough to be able to send their kids to wilderness to be able like to do that. Like, it's a great thing. But I did want to acknowledge that not like a lot of people are not able to do that. Like, a lot of people aren't in a position to be able to maybe like afford a wilderness therapy program, or maybe they do for one reason or the other, just are not able to do that. And for a wilderness, or like the big thing about wilderness therapy that makes it effective is that it gives you a spiritual awakening in a way, it really allows you to reflect on yourself and your life and see it in a different light to be able to make a change in your life. And without like a program like wilderness therapy or some other tool to make that spiritual awakening happen, it's pretty hard to make a big change. And like the main thing is the person that is causing the problems, or the person that is maybe not making great decisions with their life, has to be able to acknowledge that and want to make a change. I think that's the biggest piece of it, is just helping them to get to that point. And some people may need to hit rock bottom, which is unfortunate, but a lot of people who go through wilderness therapy come out on the other side, and they relapse and they go back to that habits that they were doing before. A lot of my friends that were in wilderness therapy or in my aftercare just are not doing that well. That's because they haven't had that full awakening or spiritual awakening or something that where they're like, okay, I need to make a change.
I want to thank each of you for so honestly sharing your stories and your thoughts today. this is tough stuff to talk about. We like everything to be great and beautiful and wonderful, and it's not always. And I think the more of us that share that reality and share our struggles, share tools that we have found have helped us, the better. There are no one size fits all answers. What worked for you, TJ, is not going to work for every struggling teen. The program that worked for you, the programs that work for your families, it's not the answer for everybody. But listeners, we, all of us, I can sense, our hearts go out to you if you are struggling. We know how much you love your kids, and we're with you. We send you our best thoughts. We send you light. We send you hope. We send you love. And most of all, we're so grateful that TJ is here with us and he is doing well today. And Jane, we send light and love to you and your son as he continues his healing and his process. I'm going to put as much information as I can in the show notes, some links to some helpful websites, because I want people to be able to access information if needed to find your own solutions to ask the questions. Thank you all for being with me today.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
While this episode may not be entirely pertinent for all of our listeners, we hope that you have learned the possibilities that are out there for support and know that maybe you have a friend or a family that is in the same position and is struggling, and you can share this podcast with them. And as Jen said, check out the show notes. She's going to put a ton of resources in there for you. Another resource, you've heard it at the beginning, is Cozy, C-O-Z-I, that app that will allow you to organize your meals, stand in the middle of the grocery store going, what am I having for dinner tonight? Open the app and there are meal suggestions there along with the grocery list of the things you need to get. Maybe it's sports schedules, the holidays coming up. All of that can be right there in the Cozy app with all of your family members connected so that you can be organized and have a overview of what everyone is up to. That's Cozy, C-O-Z-I. Look for it in your app store. Thank you for being with us. We are On Boys, Jennifer L.W. Fink and Janet Allison. If you liked this podcast, please share it with a friend. Thank you.